Okay, so we're following on in our series in Luke, and we've come to the section of Jesus' teaching. And I think it's quite a good place to be on Remembrance Day, because as we focused on the bread and wine, we reminded ourselves that just as important as remembering people that have gone before us, or more importantly, it's important to remember Jesus, and a way that we can remember him is by his teaching. So he's already got himself quite a following at this point by the time we get to his teaching. Crowds are following after him. Imagine if you had a following, what that'd be like. If I just kind of came to church this morning and I had a little bit of an entourage after me, following me. It'd be a little bit weird, wouldn't it? I wonder what it felt like for Jesus as kind of he got up in the morning and off he went, and kind of he went up onto a mountainside and he had this entourage of people following him. I wonder what it would be like for you to be followed. I wonder if people do follow you in your personality, how you are. Do they follow you? Do they come after you? Are you a teacher? Do people listen to what you say and follow you? In this passage, we want to look at how Jesus specifically taught his disciples. But crowds were there as well. They were in the background. This was the moment in which Jesus was saying, "This is what I'm all about." And it's been named the Sermon on the Mount. And the Beatitudes are the start of this sermon. Now, if you were there as a disciple or a member of the crowd and you heard this for the first time, you would have been completely and utterly shocked. And this is what C.S. Lewis had to say about the Sermon on the Mount, because someone once criticized C.S. Lewis for not caring for the Sermon on the Mount. And this is what he replied. "As to caring for the Sermon on the Mount, sorry, if caring for here means liking or enjoying, I suppose no one cares for it. Who can like being knocked flat on his face by a sledgehammer? I can hardly imagine a more deadly spiritual condition than that of a man who can read the passage with tranquil pleasure." The Beatitudes, they're like a list of phrases and teachings from Jesus that no one wants to hear. I'll read them in a minute, and you won't want to hear them. It's like the worst manifesto speech of all time. Jesus was wanting people to follow him. He's got his disciples there, and he's got this group of people coming up the hill, and he gives this worst manifesto speech of all time. First of all, before we go into them, we need to know what the word blessed means to give us a clue to the ridiculousness of these statements. It means something close to blissful, happy, deeply happy, and very fortunate. Now let me read from Luke chapter 5 some of these statements. So remember, blessed means blissful and completely happy, content, satisfied, full. All of that is wrapped up in this word blessed. "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man." And it goes on. What a manifesto speech. Poor, hungry, weeping, hated, reviled, and spurned as evil. That sounds blissful, doesn't it? That sounds deeply encouraging. That sounds really, really happy. Can I cheat as well and go over into Matthew? Because I'm going to cheat for most of the morning and focus on the Matthew passage. Actually lost the place. Here we go. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. This is from Matthew chapter 5, starting at verse 4. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. It's all upside down. It doesn't even really make sense. Poor, hungry, weeping, hated, reviled, spurned as evil. Wouldn't this sound like a better manifesto? How about an irresistible reason to follow Jesus? Maybe this is more of what the disciples were expecting. You ready? Joyful are the powerful, the rich, the landowners, those who are rich in their own spirits, because all of the kingdoms of earth belong to them and they take it by force. Blissful are the pleasure seekers, the fun lovers, the wine drinkers, and those that laugh all the time, because they will not need anyone to comfort them. Fortunate are the proud, the powerful, and aggressive, because they will not have to depend on God or man to receive what they want. Happy are the self-willed, the stubborn, and those who do just what they want to do. They will not need either God or men to satisfy their whims and their wants. Content are the revengeful, the vindictive, and those who are able to destroy their enemies. They will not stand in need of anyone's forgiveness, nor be at the mercy of anyone. Joyful are those who don't need a conscience to bug them. They can enjoy all sorts of wild pleasures and feel deeply gratified without guilt. They will not need to experience God in order to be satisfied. Happy are the quarrelsome, those fighting for possession of the world, because they will be feared and greatly respected by all. Fortunate are those who do not care for fairness and justice, because they will live in peace, protected by the mighty of the world. Now that is the world's beatitudes and their promises. Come and follow the world, the way of the world, and you can have all of this happiness. Jesus instead says, empty yourself and become poor. He wasn't telling people what they wanted to hear. It was quite the opposite. So what do these beatitudes mean? This is considered Jesus's greatest ever teaching by theologians. So let's rewind a little bit before we have a little look at them a bit more in detail. Have you ever wondered, I have plenty of times, what the key to joy is? That internal pleasure. Or the key to being deeply fulfilled and satisfied, or the key to being content. Have you ever thought to yourself, why am I such a miserable Christian? Of course not. I don't want to lead someone to Jesus if they get to live a life like mine. Have you ever thought that? I've lost that key. You might be saying to yourself, I've lost that key a long time ago. In fact, I don't believe there ever was one. And why are some Christians just really happy? That really bugs me. What have they got that I've missed all my life? It might even annoy you, me suggesting that there is a key. Don't give me another key, Gary. I've already tried thousands and none of them work. What if I told you that it was the master key and it wasn't even my ideas? It was Jesus's ideas himself. I've heard that before as well, Gary. Don't give me a load of false hope. Gary, I've been around a lot longer than you have. How dare you suggest to me that there is a key to something that I haven't already found? And don't suggest that I can have joy. If you live through the suffering that I've lived, then you would know that joy is not possible. I've had my fair share of suffering, and I don't propose to have found complete joy myself. But I can share with you what Jesus shared. And blessed, remember, means joyful, blissful, deeply happy, content and satisfied. Of course, this is not what the disciples were expecting. I don't personally like titles of books starting with the key to. I especially don't like titles starting with how to live the happy life. They just feel really patronising, don't they? Because we've lived this life for a little while now and we don't like to be told how to be happy. We think we would have found it already. So we just kind of bury our head in the sand and carry on being miserable. Guess what? All of those words, happiness, joy, being deeply fulfilled and satisfied and content, are all wrapped up in this word, blessed. And Jesus uses it when he reels off these beatitudes. Blessed, blessed, blessed. Every statement starts with this word, blessed. Now, in your quest on the earth of trying to become happy and content, have you found it yet? And have you passed it on to other people? Jesus himself says to his disciples, as he faces them up on that mountain, you can be blessed. Does that annoy you a little bit? It probably does if you're feeling particularly miserable. Okay, let's start then. Blessed are the poor. Let's start with the first one. Doesn't sound like a great key to happiness, does it? For the kingdom of heaven is theirs. That's the starting point. It's the first beatitude. All the other ones flow from it. It's a bit like a daisy chain. You have to have this one first in order to get to any of the other ones. It's the start of Jesus's main piece to his disciples. So they're hanging, they're ready for this teaching. And he says, blessed are the poor. So essentially Jesus is saying, it's blissful, it's happy, it's fortunate to be poor. So if we want to be deeply satisfied along with having the kingdom of heaven, and all that means we have to be poor, Jesus makes it quite obvious. So what on earth does it mean to be poor? I can tell you what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean memorizing the verse. Imagine if it did mean that. If we just got to memorize the Beatitudes, we could have all the blessings. Because I know them. Because I know it says, blessed are the poor. I'm blessed. I'm happy. I've memorized it. As if that would make any difference. They're there to be lived. It's no good to you memorizing the Bible unless you live it. It is no good to you. If I could somehow get up in the morning and just quote it and then I'd be happy for the rest of the day. The Pharisees, that's what they were criticized for. Knowing the scriptures without living them. It's like saying, I know the story of the Good Samaritan. In fact, I've memorized it. So now I cross over on the other side of the road when anyone's got a problem. I know it, I've memorized it. I get to cross over now. Absolutely ridiculous. Blessed are the poor. Okay, so I can be blissful if I'm poor. So Matthew says, poor in spirit. Notice the emphasis is slightly different from Luke. Luke says, blessed are the poor. Matthew says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Now, I'm going to go with blessed are the poor in spirit this morning because I'm going to be a bit lighter on you. Because you probably want to stone me if I went with Luke's version, blessed are the poor. Because you're all, statistically, rich. If you earn over £25,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of all people in the world. in terms of richness. So you are statistically, materially rich. If you earn less than that, and you're probably saying to yourself, oh, Gary, I'm under the 25,000, then you're in the top 2%. So you've got no get-out clause. In here, we're all rich. If you're on the benefit system, according to the whole world, you're rich. You're in the top 2%. So what does it mean to be poor in spirit? Okay, so speaking as a rich person, I'm not really qualified to do that because it's much easier to be poor in spirit if you are materially poor. So if you imagine I had, I don't know, £5 in my hand to go and buy a loaf of bread. It's really easy for me to get that loaf of bread because I've got £5 in my hand. So I'm reliant on that money. That money comes from my job. So it's quite easy for me to get that bread. So I'm not poor in spirit at all when it comes to my need for bread. Well, imagine if I was really, really poor and I didn't have that £5 in my hand to buy bread. Suddenly, I've got to become dependent on somebody else other than myself. Suddenly, I'm tapping into what it means to be poor in spirit. Because I can't rely on what I bring to the table. I need bread in order to live. How do I get bread when I haven't got that £5 in my hand? I need to be reliant on somebody else. So it is easier if you are poor to be poor in spirit. I think that is what Luke and Matthew are doing. I remember once travelling to Rwanda. I've got this thing where when I travel abroad, it bugs me because I am a little bit, I might not appear miserable, but in the grand scheme of things, internally, I am quite miserable. So when I travel to Rwanda, it bugs me that people seem so happy. And Tom has this little kind of system where you live life as you would a Rwandan, a day in the life of a Rwandan. Has anyone ever done it when they've gone to Rwanda with Tom? So you get a little experience of what it was about. When I went there one year, part of our job was to go and get water. So we had to go to this, like, it was a hill with a little pipe sticking out and a little drip of water. And there was a massive queue of people just queuing up with their jerry cans and just filling up their jerry cans with water and then going home. Do you know what? Everyone in that queue, the community was amazing. They were buzzing. They were so happy. And I was thinking, goodness, this queue is long and it is taking ages. But they had this poverty about them. They were so happy. And when I go to Mexico and we build houses for the poor, you should see their faces. And I'm like, nailing these bits of wood. So miserable. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Peter and Bridget here. They're not, so I can tell this story for them. I've got them to tell it once before. I love this story. By the way, I'm only on the first Beatitude. And I haven't even got that long left, have I? Peter and Bridget told this story once of they were really poor at a certain time in their life and they couldn't afford to feed their family. Can any of you remember them telling this story? Some of you. Graham's nodding his head. Anyway, they couldn't afford to feed the family, so they prayed that God would provide for them. And that, I don't know if it's Peter or Bridget, but one of them went out of their door, their front door, and on the other side of the door in a plastic bag was hanging a chicken. And God had provided food that evening for them. Now, my point is, imagine how blissful that felt to see the chicken. Imagine the joy, the deep satisfaction on seeing the chicken. They first had to be poor, otherwise it wouldn't have mattered. They could have just spent money on going to buy the chicken. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So, simply put, a person who is poor in spirit is a person that has a right view of themselves. And as a result of that view, they know that they need God. They know that they need God more than they need themselves. So it's not about starting to read self-help books. I've read so many because that, you know, that's part of what counselling's about. But actually, that's a bit of a rabbit hole. Because it's not about finding the help within yourselves. This beatitude is saying, empty yourself, become poor, the help is in God. So it's about being dependent on God. The Bible says, don't think of yourselves more highly than you ought. So you shouldn't be thinking of yourself somehow up here, like, I'm beyond God, I don't need him. But at the same time, don't go to grovel land down here and just remain in your misery. You need a right view of yourself. And that right view is, I haven't got a lot to offer in terms of being able to make a success of my life. I need God in order to do that. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So basically, it's about being real with yourself and realizing that in and of yourself and your own abilities, you don't have enough to make it in life. You don't. I'm sorry. And that's my experience of all you. I love you all, but when you live without God, you're not that good. You're not that nice. You're not much of a success. You're just an average Joe. Sorry, Joe.
I did not mean that. We'll talk about that later.
But that, it's not enough. It is not enough. We need God. And the beauty of this verse is, if we realize that, we can be blissful. We can be happy. We can be deeply satisfied. We can be fortunate. It's not a punishment to be poor in spirit. It's a blessing. Can I just say something about sin? Because we seem to have a weird relationship to it, don't we, us Christians? The things that we think, say and do that's wrong, that's sin. And I need God because of my sin. And knowing that makes me poor. It makes me poor in spirit, knowing that I need him. I need my Jesus every day to rescue me. I'm being saved daily. I know that I need God to deliver me from myself today. I'm a nightmare when I live according to myself and my own nature. God, you can be my crux. Don't you find it interesting that I've had non-Christians level it at me that, you know, God is your crux, as if that's a bad thing. I love it when they say that. In every other context, crux is a good thing anyway. So why is it suddenly bad that God is your crux? Absolutely is my crux. Is he your crux? I think he needs to be, doesn't he? Because then we'll be poor in spirit. You know, some Christians say, let's not talk about sin anymore because Jesus has forgiven it all. Well, yeah, he has forgiven it all, but it's still my sin that drives me to my need of God. It's what gets me to him. I wish it wasn't. I wish it was my perfection that led me there. But it's my sin that drives me into a deeper relationship with God, and I realize my poverty of spirit. I'm not going to get through all of these, am I? Okay, one more story about this one, and then I'll move on to the blessed are those that mourn. Basically, happy are the sad, as if that makes sense. Okay, so an example of poverty of spirit. So it's about helplessness, isn't it? It's about us realizing that we haven't got what it takes. Okay, this might be a little bit sensitive for some of you, and I apologize because of it, but I can't think of many better examples. So a lady giving birth. So in the moment in which they give birth, obviously down there at the business end, there's a lot of pain involved, isn't there? Sorry for those that haven't given birth yet, and I'll burst the bubble. But at that moment, the mother is so helpless to look after their baby. They're just in agony and pain and trying to get this baby out of them. But they can't really look after it. I mean, they're up there and the baby's down there. How can they look after it? Do you know what I mean? It is this demonstration of poverty of spirit. But do you know what the other demonstration is? When the baby comes out and they're holding the baby in their arms, blissful, deeply content, joyful, satisfied. They're first poor in spirit, and then they get this promise of the blessing. Blissful. You should have seen Jo's face when Jake was born. She was so happy. Blissful. Okay, number two. Blessed are those that mourn, for they will be comforted. I'll just get to whenever I'm due to end, and then I'll just end, knowing that I've written notes for all of these Beatitudes. Okay, so blessed are those that mourn, for they will be comforted. On the first reading, obviously, again, it does not make sense, like the first Beatitude. How can you be blessed if you mourn? I'm glad that it's Jesus saying it, not me, so you can't criticize me. I'm just reading his words. If you've got an issue with any of his words, you better go to him. It is like saying, happy are the sad. So the Beatitude is a follow-on, this is really important, from the first one. Remember the daisy chain. So first you are poor in spirit, and then you mourn because of it. So it's not solely about, if I lose a loved one, God's going to comfort me. Yes, it is about that. But it's more about what's going on inside spiritually. So we see the state of ourselves. We see the state of everybody around us. We see the state of the world, and it makes us sad. It should do. I mean, if you hear a story of some innocent lad getting beaten up out there as I'm speaking, and we go out and there's blood everywhere and he didn't do anything to deserve it, you should feel sad, or otherwise you are weird. Aren't you? You should feel sad about that. And you should mourn that the world is like it is. We just wanted that lad to have a happy day. Didn't we? And his free will was robbed from him, and we should mourn because of that. And we should mourn because of our own sin and the decay of the world. This world is dying, and it makes us mourn. So why on earth should that then make us happy? Happy are the sad. Does not make sense, does it? So what is Jesus trying to say? He's trying to say, be honest and be real. Don't live in cloud spiritual cuckoo land like you're above it all. If something's sad, it should feel sad, because it shows us that we're human, and he got sad when sad things happened. Tap into your humanity. It's also what makes you great. So when you feel that sadness, it is a good thing. And you feel happy. Do you know what? This is a weird thing. I don't know if you get it. It just might be me. If I have a good cry, I always feel better afterwards. Happy are the sad. Doesn't make sense, but it's true, isn't it? Is it true for some of you? If you have a good cry, you feel better for it afterwards. Blissful might be stretching it, but maybe you feel better for it afterwards. Have I got time for one more, or not really? One more? It won't be as long as the first one. That second one was short, wasn't it? Okay, so blessed are the meek. Now, so daisy chain. So it comes out of the first one. Blessed are the poor. And then you mourn because of that spiritual poverty. And the meek part, you share it with others. So it's, Christianity is not all about it all being internalized. So we're poor in spirit. Doesn't feel so nice inside there, does it, to be poor in spirit? We mourn about it. The meek part is to share it. To be Christians. To be together. There's nothing worse than speaking to a Christian who pretends their life is all together. It makes me want to vomit. Is it you? Because as they're talking to you, you're thinking, well, it's not true. It simply isn't true. Because we're human. So the meek part is being real with one another. So number one, an honest view of ourselves, and that makes us dependent on God. Number two, we realise what state we're in, so we mourn about it. Number three, we share what we're feeling. So the first three Beatitudes are all about emptying ourselves. Now, if I had time, the other ones are about filling. So you'd like the other ones, but I haven't got time. So the other ones are about filling. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. That's much more positive than emptying. But first you've got to empty in order to be filled. You can't just have the good stuff without emptying the other stuff out first. And the strange thing is, the emptying is also a blessing. The emptying isn't bad. It's good, because that's what the Bible says. You're blessed, you're blissful if you empty. Okay, I think I've come to, I've probably gone over. Have I gone over? I'm all right. 12 o'clock. Okay. So maybe I'll just end by saying they're not to be memorized. It's absolutely pointless. If you go home and think, I've remembered Gary's talk. Useless. Absolutely useless. How do we become poor? Every beatitude drives us back into the first beatitude. You must become poor in spirit in order to be happy and blessed and blissful. So key to happiness, become poor in here and you'll be happy. I reckon there are more miserable rich people than there are miserable poor people. Amen.